Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This is a big week for Torah, and in a traditional service, three Sifrei Torah are removed from the Aron HaKodesh and read during the service. Learn all about this in this podcast from Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week is a very special Shabbat. It actually has three names. Parshat Pkudei, Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, Parshat Shkalim. These three names are connected with three Torah readings that we do this Shabbat, which makes the Shabbat unique. There are rare occasions when we have three Torah readings on a Shabbat, which means taking out three Sifrei Torah. The first Torah reading is our Parsha, Parshat Pkudei. The last Parsha of the Book of Shemot, the Parsha which the whole Book of Shemot has been leading to, the construction of the Mishkan, the establishment of the home of God, the place which is filled with the glory of God. But this Shabbat is also Rosh Chodesh, and we acknowledge that with a second Torah reading, which we do every Rosh Chodesh. The Torah reading connected with the sacrifices that are brought on Shabbat and on Rosh Chodesh. Numbers, chapter 28, verses 9 through 15. But there is a third Torah reading, known as Parshat Shkalim. Parshat Shkalim, which is the opening section of Parshat Ki Tisa, which we read a few weeks ago, Exodus chapter 30, verses 11 through 16. We are told in the Mishnah, in Masechet Megillah, chapter 3, Mishnah 4, when Rosh Chodesh Adar occurs on Shabbat, we read Parshat Shkalim. If Rosh Chodesh comes out in the middle of the week, we read Parshat Shkalim, the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh. What is the connection between Parshat Shkalim and Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Adar? In Masechet Shkalim, we are told, on the chapter 1, Mishnah 1, on the first day of Adar, they would announce regarding the Shkalim. What are they announcing? During the time of the temple, the fiscal year of the temple began on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is described in the Torah as the first of the months of the year. The significance of the fiscal year beginning then is that all of the communal sacrifices need to be brought from money that was collected anew. Hence, on Rosh Chodesh Adar, an announcement was made throughout all the cities of Israel that all of the half shekels should be brought to the temple by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so that the new money could be used to purchase all of the communal offerings. What I would like to do today is to examine in more depth the section of Parshat Shkalim and also the connection to Rosh Chodesh Adar. So let us begin by looking at the verses, Exodus chapter 30, verses 11 through 16. And God said to Moshe, saying, when you raise up the head of the Jewish people, according to their numbers, Each man shall give kofer nafsho, a ransom of his soul, to God, as you count them. And there shall not be a plague when you count them. This is what they should give, all those who pass over in the count, a half a shekel of the holy shekel, a shekel which is measured, whose value is 20 gerah, a half of that shekel, you should give as a truma l'Hashem, a contribution to God. All those who pass over in the count above the age of 20 shall give this contribution to God. Verse 15. The rich person shall not increase, the poor person shall not diminish from that half shekel. To give that contribution to God to atone for their souls. And in verse 16, you shall take the money of atonement from the Jewish people, give it over to the service done in the tent of meeting, and it shall be to the Jewish people as a remembrance before God to atone for your souls. On one level, the rabbis see these verses referring to the half shekel which needs to be given year in, year out by all those men above the age of 20. The purpose of this gift, it is a contribution to God, and as described in the verses, it is meant to be an atonement. How is it an atonement? Well, if this money is used for the purchase of the communal offerings, the daily sacrifices, the additional offerings that are brought on Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, festivals, all these offerings are seen as being a constant source of atonement for the Jewish people. Hence, we can see the connection between the money which is given and how this is an atonement for the Jewish people. But there is another dimension to this section, which is not looking at what is done every year, but specifically is looking at a situation when a census is taken. The idea being, don't count the people 1, 2, 3. Have them give a half shekel. Count their half shekels. And somehow this will be an atonement to them. And Rashi, on verse 12, says a very interesting comment. He says, when things are counted, the evil eye rules over them. A plague comes upon them. And he quotes a very interesting story that appears at the end of the book of Samuel 2, connected with King David. I will not go into the whole story, but let me just note, at a certain point, King David wants to count the general Jewish population, and in particular, the tribe of Yehuda. And the count seems to be the number of able-bodied men who are fit to serve in his army. He tells his commander-in-chief, Yoav, this is in Samuel 2, chapter 24, verse 1, verse 2. He says to Yoav, go and count the general population. And Yoav is very reluctant to do so. He even intimates, what's the point of it? You have a lot of soldiers, and may you be blessed with even more. Yet David is insistent. And Yoav follows the orders and comes back and reports to David. There are 800,000 able-bodied men among the general Jewish population, 500,000 in the tribe of Yehuda. And when David hears that, he all of a sudden has pangs of remorse, says to God, I have sinned. And then he is told, he has a choice of his expiation. And eventually we're told that God brings, this is verse 15, a great plague from morning till evening. 77,000 men die from Dan to Beersheba. And the question is raised, why? What was wrong in taking this census? And as Rashi says, it is already alluded to in our parsha when it says, when you take a census, make sure to give a ransoming of the soul. Let there not be a plague as they're being counted. I would like to suggest one explanation offered in the commentaries. There was no need for David to take a census. Perhaps what was motivating him was a sense of pride, of hubris. Look at how many people I rule over who are ready to fight at the moment I give the command. That hubris has a flip side of the coin. As David is raised up in the census that he takes, he is also putting down, reducing the value of all those people being counted. They are simply instruments, pawns, in glorifying his kingdom. This is why the Torah has a problem with census taking. When a census is taken, does it reduce the individual or enlarge the individual? Does it tell that person, you are important? Or is it saying, you're just a number? Nowadays, we have a tendency of getting very caught up with statistics. But I think we also have the awareness that statistics can somehow desensitize us to the human element. Perhaps the most famous statistic that we're familiar with is the 6 million. But after a while, 6 million becomes a hollow term. And that is why in Israel, on Yom HaShoah, there is a campaign to say that behind every number there is a name, there is a face. There's an attempt to show that these aren't just numbers. These are real people. In the same way that in Israel, we are told of the numbers, the statistics of people killed in automobile accidents, people who were killed in terror attacks. And yet to the credit of the media, there is an attempt made to show the human side of who these people were, which makes the loss so much more profound. In our parsha, it says, when you take a census, it's very important how you do it. And the expression in verse 12, Ki tisa et rosh b'nei Israel, lift up the head of the Jewish people. Acknowledge them. Make them realize that they're important. Empower them. They're being called upon. Nachmanides, in his commentary in the beginning of Numbers, actually brings up a very interesting parallel. In chapter 40, in Bereshit, in the story of Joseph and the butler and the baker. The butler and the baker have dreams. Joseph solves their dreams. And in the course of doing so, he says to the butler, in 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and reinstate you. And he says to the baker, in 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head from off of you and hang you. Lifting up one's head in both cases is an expression of acknowledgement. It can be very positive. It can also be very negative. If I'm being acknowledged, if I'm being counted upon, that can be very empowering. It could be very honorable. But it also implies responsibility, accountability. If I don't live up to the expectations, I will pay the price. and sometimes a very heavy price. This idea then leads into the word, which is used for counting, pkudehem. The same word which is the heading of our parsha, pkudei. If we look at the beginning of our parsha, what are we told? We are given a listing, an accounting of all the money that was given to the tabernacle, a very detailed account. And some commentaries understand that this is the idea of pkudim, detail, individuate. Don't just speak globally, but look at the details. If I digress for one moment to our parsha, why do we need to have those details of exactly how much money was collected? Midrashim explain that this illustrates how every public figure, or even not public figure, should have to demonstrate their integrity by giving a very detailed account. Anyone who is involved in handling finances should be accountable for what was done with that money. Even Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why the details are very, very important. Why someone cannot say, well, I basically used the money for X, but here and there was some money that was lost, wasted. If, as in our parsha, the money which is collected is a contribution to God, then every single penny, every single element of that money that's collected should be used for that purpose. And that is why Moshe needed to give an accounting. And maybe let me just add to that. The word pkudei is related to the word tafkid, role, function. It is very important to see that when I count things, if I have money, I don't just count it because that makes me feel powerful. I count it because I will be doing something with that. Something responsible. Something, as I said, for which I will be accountable. And then I have to ask myself, what is that role which I am giving to that which I am counting? To what degree am I using that in a way which will raise it up? In our parsha, not only does Moshe give a very detailed account of all the money collected, but he also gives an accounting for what was done with that money, of how that money was used in a very purposeful way. If I digress for a moment and go to our parsha, Parshat Shkalim, which focuses on censuses, and as I pointed out, this is an allusion to the census which is taken in the beginning of Bamidbar. Rashi says it alludes to the census in the time of King David. In both cases, there are censuses taken of the military. It raises a very important issue for the ones taking the census. When you take that census, do you appreciate the value of each one who is being counted? Rather than reducing them to being a statistic, do you see each one as being a world unto himself? And if you recognize how each one is valuable, do you then give them a role to play, which is purposeful? Or do you see some of them as being, people who in the end can be eliminated or can be doing busy work? It places a very heavy burden on the ones who are taking the census to see the value of each element in what's being counted and to make sure that in the end it actualizes its purpose in a positive way. I would like to conclude by giving another explanation of why we read this section, Rosh Chodesh Adar. And this might be implicit in the Mishnah, but is actually explicitly hinted at in a comment made in the Babylonian Talmud, Megillah 13b. And the comment goes as follows. It was known before the one who said, "Let the world be," that in the future, Haman would try to take the money of the Jewish people, or maybe a better way of phrasing this, to sell out the Jewish people for money. Therefore the Torah preceded their shekels to his shekels. And that's why we make the announcement on Rosh Chodesh Adar to bring the shekels to the tabernacle. The last statement is my addition. The Talmud is drawing a very interesting connection. In Megillat Esther, we know that Haman is determined to exterminate the Jewish people. But in order to do that, he needs to get the authorization from the king. And Haman then comes to the king with a proposal which he cannot refuse. And this is Megillat Esther, chapter 3, verse 9. He says, "If it is good to the king, let it be written to destroy the Jewish people, and 10,000 talents of silver will I measure through the hands of those who do the work to bring to the treasury of the king," which means that the trump card, what convinces the king to allow Haman to now go about issuing an edict, destroying the Jewish people, is money. Presumably when the Jews are killed, the spoils of war, all of their property, will be confiscated and brought to the king's treasury. 10,000 talents of silver is an exorbitant amount of money. And just to illustrate this, if you look at the numbers in the beginning of our parsha, this is in chapter 38, in Shemot, chapter 38, verse 25. It says, "And the silver that was collected from the community was 100 talents. This is 100 times that amount. And what does the Talmud say? In the merit of the money which the Jews gave to the tabernacle, the levy which is placed upon them, they were eventually saved from what happened later on in the time of Haman. This is not just some sort of cute literary connection, but is a very profound statement. If I go back to the story of Megillat Esther, before Haman makes his very generous offer to the king, in chapter 3, verse 5, he describes the Jews in the following manner. "There is one nation which is scattered, which is divided among all the nations, in all of the countries of your kingdom. Their laws are different from every nation, and the laws of the king they do not do. And there is absolutely no value in the king allowing them to remain." I want to focus on the initial phrase. They are a people who are scattered and divided. It could also be translated as divisive. And many commentaries note that the Achilles heel of the Jewish people is when we are divided, when we are scattered. And Haman uses that against us. Later on in the Megillah, when Esther is about to go to the king to plead the case of the Jews, in chapter 4, verse 16, she says to Mordechai, "Go, gather the Jewish people in Shushan and fast. Go, gather the Jewish people is a response to Haman. Jewish unity, Jewish solidarity. And this ultimately brings about the redemption of the Jewish people. Let me come back to the Shkalim. In our parsha, Parshat Shkalim, it talks about the census. And as I said to you before, there are a number of elements which I think in the end become very important here. The first element, when a census is being taken, make sure that people contribute a half shekel. The first thing is empower people. Make them realize they're not just a number, but they're someone that has something to contribute. Give them a sense of responsibility. Give them a sense of accountability. When the announcement was made on Rosh Chodesh, everyone should now bring in their half shekel to the temple treasury. It's a way of calling upon them. Lift up your head. Take up the responsibility. Be accountable. But the second thing, the rich man shall not increase. The poor man shall not diminish. There is a sense of equality. No one is greater than the other. We are all equal. And why are we all equal? We have a common purpose. The common purpose, either in the construction of the Mishkan, in the upkeep of the Mishkan, in service of God, service of God which is to bring atonement to everybody, where one person cannot say, I need more atonement, or perhaps less atonement, and therefore my contribution will be different, where people are able to somehow transcend themselves and to look at the greater collective. This is the message of Parshat Shkalim. This is the message of what it means to create a community which has a sense of purpose, where the individuals are very, very important, but that their importance is integrated towards the common goal, the common good, where there is a sense of equality in an environment which is what is described in the last few parshiot, where the people are able to somehow bring out the best in every single one, not at the expense of the other, but in cooperation with the other, to create a whole which is much larger than the sum of its parts. That is a framework which can bring about the divine presence in its midst. That is a framework which can overcome any type of hostility. This is how the Jews can ultimately triumph over Haman. Unfortunately, in Israel, you are constantly confronted by different types of Hamans who are looking to obliterate us, who play on the divisions among us, between us. This month is a time for stock-taking. To what degree is it that we can learn to be able to really work together as a people, to value every single individual? As one person said on the news today, that a citizen of Shderot is no less important than a citizen of Ashkelon or of Tel Aviv. That every single person is a world unto himself or herself. If we are able to learn that lesson, if we are able to learn what it is to give, then what was true in days of old can be true in our time as well. May there be revach v'hatzalah, breathing space, salvation to the Jewish people, sason v'simcha, joy, throughout our land. And may we be able to merit to actually see a reality where people cooperate with each other, where they give of each other, where they are responsible and accountable, and thus bring about the divine presence in our midst. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your emails to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.